This is the Dinner Party Download from APM. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. And now, the main course, the part of the show where we talk about food.
Yeah, and Brendan, this week I had a pretty tough assignment. I had to eat freshly carved prime rib in Beverly Hills.
I'm sorry to hear that. Are you okay?
I think I'm all right. I am. I'm recovering.
I'm here for you, as is my cardiologist. We're both here for you if you need to talk.
Thank you, man. But I had a good reason for going through this hell. Prime rib, that staple cut of beef favored by many a mid-century restaurant, is enjoying a comeback.
And convenient.
Yes, for me. Showing up on menus and trendy eateries in New York City and elsewhere. So to learn about prime rib, I went to the obvious LA spot, Lowry's The Prime Rib. Go figure. When they opened in the late 1930s, prime rib was the only entree on the menu.
And they I love it.
Right? And they still serve it tableside from special carts. I asked executive chef and fourth-generation employee Ryan Wilson to first tell me what sets prime rib apart from other cuts.
Most people think when eating a piece of meat, they're thinking of a steak. They're thinking of something that'll hit a hot pan or a hot grill that gets that crust and that charbroiled flavor. Prime rib, however, is a much bigger piece of meat. In our case, usually 16 to 18 pounds, that's roasted whole and then carved afterwards. So you don't have all that texture on the whole piece, you just have it on the outside.
All right, so you kind of get the charbroiled crust just around the edge of the piece of meat instead of on all sides of it. And the rest of it is, I think of it as more tender and kind of more rare.
Absolutely. Largely what we're going after in prime rib is tenderness and mouthfeel, and we're really going for that juicy succulence. Steak is going to have much more aggressive flavors and textures, and you put a lot of pepper and chili and all sorts of different rubs on it. Prime rib is much more about the meat itself.
How did it become such an important piece of meat? Filet mignon is often, you know, spoken of as one of the king cuts of meat, but prime rib, I can't think of many pieces of meat that have a restaurant named after
it. It's a fabulous question, and I think it has something to do with the simple anatomy of the meat, with a big, beautiful bone on it, and it's got a great, tender, actual muscle, and it's flavorful. The filet mignon has become popular more recently, and I think it's largely because of its lean component to it, whereas in the past, you know, in history, people wanted fattier, richer cuts of meat, whereas the filet mignon, it was still prized, but not nearly as much as the prime rib, and doesn't have all the fat to it.
The prime rib may have suffered from the health craze, maybe.
It has, without a doubt.
But I feel like it's back now. What do you think has brought it back? There's now a trend to kind of rediscover the prime rib?
Because I think we're in a wonderful cycle of classics coming back, and I think people are recognizing the prime rib is so much more than just what you see on a bad Vegas buffet. Those classic dishes from the 50s, 60s, there was real value to them, and let's go back and cherish them again.
Speaking of which, part of the reason people come here as well has as much to do with the kind of classic presentation as it does with the meat cut. Sitting at the end of this table right now is a giant, I guess it's chrome or stainless steel cart. Tell me about it.
So these are our, what we call our silver carts. They are not silver. They are stainless steel. The design. Yeah, we don't have armed guards beside them. The design really hasn't changed much since we opened in 1938, heavily influenced by my great-grandfather. And the idea, in large part, was to be able to bring the kitchen to the table. And part of that is that old-time Sunday experience of watching, oftentimes, Dad carve the roast, right? I mean, that was part of the ceremony. He would stand at the end of the table with his carving knife and fork, and he'd carve the roast.
There's a lot less of this done now. There was a time when tableside service was quite a big deal in the mid-century. Now there are very few places that do it. Why is that?
Because it takes a lot of training. It takes a lot of experience. It takes a lot of investment. These are not inexpensive pieces of equipment. It's, I would imagine, about 4 feet long, probably stands close to 4 feet tall. Fully loaded, they weigh over 500 pounds.
And it looks like it's also got this kind of Art Deco slash 50s custom hot rod look to it. It's really cool.
They're incredible, and they are very time-consuming to make. There are, frankly, only a handful of people left that can do this sort of metalwork.
Let's see this in action, because this thing is wheeled out by somebody who is specially trained, is my understanding, to do this job. Tell me about that.
So our carvers have a knowledge of all the recipes. They need to know how to make the mashed potatoes, the cream corn, cream spinach, Yorkshire pudding, And then obviously how to handle the meat. And they have to have a tableside service component. They need to be able to present to the guests and introduce themselves, talk to the guest about what beef we're serving, the history of the restaurant.
So basically they have to be able to be really good chefs, but also be able to talk to people. And I can tell you as a radio guy who interviews a lot of chefs, that's hard to come by.
Speaking as a chef myself, yes, you don't oftentimes find that combination of tactical capability and willingness, let alone passion around talking to people.
Let's see this happen. This is
Gregorio.
Gregorio, how long have you been doing this?
28 years.
28 years?
Yeah. 89.
I'll ask you, what cut should I get? What's your favorite cut from this cart?
This all depends how hungry you have. You can have a Lowry's cut. That's a typical cut.
How big is that, the Lowry's cut?
It's 9 to 10 ounces.
Okay, it's the classic cut. I'll take that, and then I can bring some back to all of the jealous people back in the studio who can't believe I got this assignment. Oh my God, that is cutting like butter. And of course, you're putting mashed potatoes on there. Yeah. You didn't have to ask me if I wanted them because, of course, I did. And let's see.
I would tell you to start next to the bone. I think that's probably one of the more tender sections, and you're going to get some great richness and flavor from the meat next to the bone.
Here we go. That is ridiculous. There is something about the mouthfeel of it that makes it feel opulent.
Emotionally, I can't pinpoint it, but you're absolutely right. Certainly pleasurable, but you feel really satisfied.
Oh, I do feel, though, that I should ask one question for the vegetarians in the audience. I actually interviewed someone who was an expert in mid-century dining, and he said that this restaurant pioneered the idea of serving salad at the beginning of a meal. It used to be served at the end. And the point was to show off that in California you could have fresh vegetables all year round. Is that true?
I can't make sure that it's true, but it's definitely part of our lore. The other one that I think is important to mention, that we also claim the first restaurant to offer a doggy bag, because these are big meals.
Ryan Wilson of Lowry's Restaurants. April 27th was National Prime Rib Day, by the way. So if
Happy
you could,
Prime Rib Day.
Hey, so if you couldn't book a seat at the Prime Rib, there's why.
That explains why you're wearing that big, big meat pin in your chest.
It's a bone, but yeah, I put a pin on it.
Okay.